Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
At the foot of Washington and RJ Way, we are inside KeyBank Center. It is a Sabres Live on the heels of a 5-3 Carolina win in the Stanley Cup Final last night, which we will get to. The series is even at 4 with the human rain delay.
Yes.
I'm Brian. Hi, Marty.
Yeah, it was a journey. Concert here tonight, so I won't throw that in.
Nicely done. It has been a journey for you. Back to your Rochester roots last night,
man,
throwing out
an amazing night.
Were you delayed? Was it raining?
No, it wasn't raining early. It rained as I was probably done with my autograph session, middle of the game, rain delayed, and they resumed at 10:30. Then in the ninth inning, they lost the game. But, you know, the best part of this all is I met so many great people, but I also got this great, and I will show it off to the camera. Look at that, Duffer. Like, look at that hoodie.
You were pretty proud to get this.
I was pretty proud. This Rochester Red Wings hoodie. It's, you know how we love hoodies.
Yes.
You love hoodies, and you've got me to love hoodies even more. I got up this morning. I'm like, I don't care if it's 85 and sunny or 42 and rainy. I don't care. I'm wearing the hoodie today, and I am so excited to have it on. Everybody was great over there. Dan, the GM, was fantastic. Got to sit in his office, and it was
are we not going to see your first pitch?
I'm delaying this because you haven't seen my first pitch
yet.
No,
I want to have a genuine, honest reaction here to it.
Okay, there was multiple first pitches.
Oh,
I was
no.
the
Why?
Last
what
one
happened?
To take a first pitch, not me. But this is what, like, it's just a very simple toss. Like, you know, nothing too hard, a little loop-de-loop in there, maybe clocked in at 51 miles an hour.
Oh, you're exaggerating.
Maybe 37.
43. Yeah, 43. Yeah, 40.
Wouldn't work. But it was so fun because...
Kilometers, not...
There was five of us doing that, you know, each a pitch, right? Yeah. So you got... This little girl did, and I think she was with the Boys and Girls Club. She did a pitch, and she got an ovation. She was awesome. And then the next guy goes out there. He's with ESL, the bank in, you know, that's what the stadium's called. He goes right up to the plate, right on the mound. And I'm like, you're brave, man. Like, I'm not going up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then Haley Wynn was there, Olympian, you know, that won a gold medal with Team USA at the Olympics with Haley Skamura. And she went up there, and she had a good one, too. But I'm like, I'm staying at on the first floor. I'm not going to the third floor on the mount. I'm staying at the bottom of the dirt.
Yeah.
And by the time I was done, I was on the grass. That's how I did it.
How's your... right rotator cuff.
It's fantastic. You know what? The biggest thing, you know how people are, Marty, you're a lot taller than you are, which I got about 50 times yesterday because I kept getting up the chair, taking pictures with fans and whatever. But as soon as I grabbed, they gave me this baseball. As soon as I grabbed it, I'm like, man, it's a lot smaller than I remember it being. Because, you know, we do a lot of, you do softball charity events and whatever, so you're always with a softball. And now I put this little, it felt like a golf ball in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's so tiny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the ballpark in Rochester is great. I remember when we played the Frozen Frontier in Rochester 10 years ago. The Amherst, is it 11 years? Is it 15 or 16?
I think it was 14. I think it's 12 years now. But
it may have been. Yeah. Anyway, but Matt Ellis scored the shootout winner for the Rochester Americans. Mm-hmm. There was a righty played
and
a
the
game.
Only reason he got a chance to do the shootout winner was because Larson scored to tie it right before.
Yeah, they went to like Angry Larry. Yeah. But then we had the alumni game, Rochester Americans, Buffalo Sabres alumni game. We had a junior Sabres junior game there. There was college game. There was high school games. It was fun. So when I was there, they're like, we got to bring back the Frozen Frontier. And I'm like, yeah, we do. We got to talk to our people here. Even if, like, the Amherst were to play again, the Sabres could do a practice there one day with fans. Like, it would be so much fun. So I'm the leading force behind the second edition of Frozen Frontier.
No outdoor rinks around the Stanley Cup Final this year. It's hot in Vegas. It's hotter in Carolina today after a Game 4 win last night. That was what, in your opinion, from a Canes standpoint?
I'm going to say crazy, and crazy in a good sense. Look, they got down, they come back, you know.
They were never down.
Vegas came down, was down and come back. The year before, the game before that, it was Vegas that was up 4-0. Carolina comes back. But so the Jordan Staal goal, that was the game-winning goal, the 4-3 goal, where he's fumbling backwards. He can't stay on his feet. He gets that puck to, elevate just enough over Carter Hart. It was a crazy goal. And I'm like, that's what the game was. Like, it wasn't scripted. There were so many breakaways. There were so many weird bounce. The empty net goal is a weird bounce. Shot around the glass. It hits the stanchion, goes all the way down the middle of the net.
Reminds me, I wanted to see how long.
The empty netters?
Vegas leads the playoffs in empty netters with seven. Carolina has five. But what I was going to look at was, because you always like the length of the actual goal.
This has to be like 191 feet.
It has to be, because he was right up against the backboards.
Yeah. What did they say?
They said 187 feet.
Yeah, okay, so that makes sense because of where he was. He's 2 feet from the board, a foot, whatever, right? So it's 10 feet behind the net.
It's about as long as humanly possible.
It's about as long as humanly possible. It's like a 109-yard return from the end zone in the NFL.
Exactly.
That's what it is, right? Here's the thing. So that was a weird bounce of Jordan Staal. I was watching back and forth between the CBC broadcast and the ABC broadcast, and when Jordan Staal scored the goal, Ray Ferraro had a fantastic line. So he shows that there was a couple of, well, there was first the Jarvis chance alone in front on a breakaway. Rebound goes in the corner. Jarvis goes. Ehlers goes. And Vegas had five guys in the corner. He goes, and the Vegas Golden Knights decided to have a team picture in the corner. I'm like, I'm stealing this at one point.
Yep.
Like a team picture in the corner, which allowed Jordan Staal to be alone. There was a crazy no goal at the end of the first period that just the clock beats the Vegas goal, no
McNabb,
goal.
Yeah.
McNabb, that would have been unbelievable. The fans in Vegas are booing when the announcement comes on saying there's no goal, the clock had run out. Well, you're booing who? Like the clock operator? Because he... You know, like there's nothing to boo, but it was a crazy game.
Yeah, and Vegas still even, got the next two anyway, thanks to Carlson and Howden. Has anything changed in the Conn Smythe pursuit now? Because, like, I think after a game like last night, I think Howden, was labeling all along, and Stankoven, I think the two of them should have taken even more significant strides towards closing that gap on Mitch Marner. Because Carolina has now evened the series, so you have to start really balancing this and not just look at it from the Vegas standpoint. And Stankoven's 11 with the game-opening punch, which I get it. First goals of games haven't meant everything or anything in this series.
The second goal hasn't meant anything.
But I think he's been such a catalyst for everything that they do well that I think Stankoven absolutely should be among the shorter odds here. So
I think, for me, I think the one that took the biggest step forward last night is Jordan Staal. Because
to be mentioned with Mike Bossy.
Yes, as the only player to score four straight goals in the first four games of the...
And also Mario Lemieux, first one to have five in this many games to start a Stanley Cup final.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible. They said the last one to have done it was Mike Bossy, right? And we're talking that four cup run in a row in the early 80s for the New York Islanders, but...
Why is Taylor Hall still so high up here on the odds? I don't... Marner's first, Stankoven and Hall... our second, Jordan Staal is behind them, then Blake, then Ehlers, then Jarvis, then Bussy.
I don't know that
then
I would say.
Howden is still long odds. That makes no sense to me.
Is he still plus 1,000?
Oh, it's way more.
More than that now?
Yeah. So,
doesn't make sense to me. Hall had an assist last night, I think. He only had an assist. He's still involved.
Remember what Jeff said?
That was a nice play on the power play, though. He comes, walks the line, feeds it over on the power play. That was a nice play.
I thought that was also the biggest down moment for Vegas was their inability to capitalize on that early third period power play. When Miller went off, less than 2 minutes into
tripping
the period,
penalty.
You got an even game. Everything is still kind of buzzing from the previous period. And we'll talk with Dave Pagnotta from fourth period coming up here because obviously they do a tremendous job and have for a long time, always on site at all the marquee events. So we can get into the finals with him and pending free agency and all the rest. But I'll be curious to get his opinion as being around the series as close as what you would want to be and see little things in people. That power play for Vegas that didn't produce much in the third period was the first time that I've had some concerns about where Eichel's game is at right now.
You know what is in my head right now? I want to talk Jack Eichel.
You know how close I watch everything he does, and that's
he missed two backdoor plays.
And it's not just the misses; it's the pursuit defensively. Yes. Sometimes it's I feel like he has a great wingspan to negate plays, but I don't. It almost looks like he's not able to get 100% of his speed, putting him into the position that he often is. And it ends up being a frustrating night because he had that glorious late chance off the faceoff.
Yes.
Good fortune.
In the slot.
Yeah. And it's a great shot. He's going right over. That's a perfectly play. He just went too high with it, right?
But again, that's what Jack's game is at right now. He's missing. And he's not controlling the play like we used to remember Jack here in Buffalo, but even in Vegas. Mm-hmm. The only guy that has puck possession for the Vegas Golden Knights right now is Mitch Marner.
But I thought Jack had too much possession with little to show for it on that one power play.
On the one power play. He kept going to the side and waiting and waiting. Yes, absolutely. But he missed some opportunities. And now, like the biggest, from the start of the series, they have played Jordan Staal against Jack Eichel's line. Mm-hmm. And it was the start, you know, of the series in Carolina that was Brenda Moore saying, I want Staal against Eichel.
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to put Staal against Marner. Well, they played Stankoven, Hall, and Blake against Marner most of the time. And so much so that what does John Tortorella do? He's like, to help Jack Eichel a little bit because he seems to not be going to his game, we're going to put Mark Stone on the top line and drop Dorofeev. So it's Barbashev, Eichel, and Stone.
And Dorofeev's quiet now, too.
Dorofeev's quiet because he's not on that line.
Right.
And so it really is hurting. By the way, the Howden odds were plus 15,000. Yeah. That's what we just showed. So he was at plus 1,000. In game two, I think it was game two or game three when he scored, he went as high as plus 850, I think, and then it just dropped after that.
Yeah. So both teams, as always, you know, will have a chance to reset here, although not for long because you're right back at it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then there's the gap between game five and now, much needed, game six. And will it end in Vegas on Sunday? Or will it go to a game seven?
I said Vegas in six, but now I'm starting to be a little concerned. I'm a little concerned because, look, Carolina made their goalie change. Freddie Anderson, is he injured, right? He took that hit to the head by Barbashev on the second overturned goal in game three and then proceeded to give up four goals in the rest of that period. He gave up six total, but only four counted, and then was pulled for Bussy. He goes to double OT. Weird bounce off the end wall. Shea Theodore wins it for Vegas. Now, game four, Freddie Anderson's not dressed. Mm-hmm. And he took a maintenance day the day before, did not dress in this one. Rod Brindamore, after the game, said he needs a little bit of a break. Yes, Freddie Anderson's that type of goalie. He's never going to be 55, 60 games type of goalie. He's not going to be a full playoff type of goalie. He needs a break. But I think there's a hidden message that maybe we're not hearing. Freddie Anderson's had that happen before where it's like, he just needs a little maintenance, little maintenance. He's out for a month with an injury. We saw that in Toronto. We saw that in Carolina. We saw that everywhere he's been. I'm wondering now, he wasn't even dressed last night, which is fine. Like, we've seen this in Buffalo with, you know, Luukkonen was starting, Lyon wasn't dressed, Ellis was the backup, whatever. That's fine. But Bussy now is your guy. He played well last night. Played okay. That's what he does, though. Mm-hmm. His season was 31-6-2 with an .895 save percentage. Mm-hmm. He wins. He finds a way to win. Is he the
fastest? The Carolina way. It's less about Bussy, less about Anderson, lesser this year about Kochetkov because of limited games played. But, yeah, it feels like no matter who they transition into that position, they get basically the same result, which is
– But Vegas can't go away from Carter Hart now. They can't go to Aiden Hill. So the difference is that there was a little door open for Bussy to come in.
Had the game gotten away from Vegas last night, would you have even thought that or no?
If it had been like 4-0, 5-1 in the third, you put Aiden Hill for a period, see how he's feeling and whatever. But no, now you battled all the way till the end. It's a one-goal game late, right?
We'll talk more about the finals coming up. Dave Pagnona from the fourth period joins us. Bussy, of course, is going to be talked about even more here in the days ahead and even here on this show. But, yeah, Vegas does have a knack for, you know, especially Mark Stone being able to get in behind the defense. So
how is he getting wide open breakers?
Smart. It's intelligence.
That's what it is.
Give me the highest IQ players all the time.
We had my least favorite play yesterday happen. It was almost a turning point in the game. How the heck do people on the power play not know when the power play is about to be over? Taylor Hall comes out breakaway.
I thought you loved that play.
I love that play for a player, but not for the part. Yeah. Goalie's banging his stick. Mm-hmm. The penalty's expiring. And then you cheat offensively just to give up a breakaway. That could have changed the game right there.
What do you want to say about the latest on the Oilers and Mike Babcock and everything that continues to come out, whether it's from Pierre LeBrun or from Sarah Valley or Dreger, who, by the way, Darren will be, of course, on the show tomorrow.
So I said it yesterday. Listen, Mike Babcock, probably a good coach, like structure-wise. He coached Team Canada. He coached, you know, Stanley Cup winner or whatever. He's done some things that are questionable in his career. Can I look over? Yes. Can I move forward? Yes. And I think the Oilers want, the players want Mike Babcock to be their coach, knowing what they know. But now there's many reports. Frank Saravalli had a report today. There's many reports saying that the NHLPA has significant more allegations that he investigated that were not made public. So when in Columbus, he decided to take the player's cell phone and go through it and see what's going on and what they're doing and whatever, there's other allegations that maybe were found into the investigation that was never made public. And now it makes me think, like, oh, do you want to go down that path again? So I don't know. I don't have enough information. With the information I've got, I'm like, that's fine. Edmonton wants him. He's a coach. You know, everybody gets second chances, third chances, whatever, go. But if there's other allegations and other things that are proven that was way over the line, and who knows what those are? I don't know. I don't have enough information right now to be able to make my mind off of it. It'll be interesting to see if the NHL investigates.
You imagine, though, if, because this is only happening because the Oilers obviously want to move forward and make this decision. Yeah. Like, what if it doesn't happen? What are they going to do? Still sit around and wait for Cassidy?
Probably. Probably. And it really, I said it yesterday on the show, this is only happening because Vegas did not allow Edmonton to talk to Bruce Cassidy. We wouldn't be there. Maybe Mike
Babcock, there could be somebody else, obviously. But, I mean, common sense based on the...
Joe Pavelski?
You know, the nature of...
Now that Joe Pavelski's name is out there with the Leafs...
Why wouldn't you?
Maybe McDavid's like, hey, why not go Joe Pavelski?
Do you think Gabe Landeskog would make a great coach someday?
I think he'd be a fantastic
he
coach.
Yesterday claimed the Masterton Trophy and the Messier Award. Obviously, all, you know, speaking about leadership and commitment and character and things like that. And obviously, tough from a Sabre standpoint because Dahlin ended up being the runner-up to Landeskog for the Masterton Trophy.
So, I mean, obviously, being in Buffalo and seeing Rasmus Dahlin throughout the season, the impact that I mean, Carolina had to go through and what Dahls had to go back to Sweden a few times when she came back, all of it. I would have put Rasmus Dahlin number one. I understand why Gabriel Landeskog is the Masterton winner and the Messier Award winner and all of that. What I don't understand is there's 200 voters on that, and even a guy like Landeskog only got 135 ballots with his name on it in the top three. Mm-hmm. Dahlin only got 111 ballots with his name on it. Like, 50% of the ballots had Dahlin's name on it in the top three? Like, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. Like, listen, did you not know what impact that does personally? A guy that... His fiance has a heart transplant. They lose a child. She's in Europe. He's here. There's so much that comes into this. Look, congrats on Gabriel Landeskog. Well-deserving. Mm-hmm. I'm a little concerned with the voting. Again, and this is not just the first time this year that we're concerned with voting with certain situation with the awards.
Yeah, I mean, we won't spend too much more time on it, obviously, but just to say, you think Landeskog will actually go into coaching someday?
I think he would.
Yeah, I hope so. I think
it depends. He's made a lot of money. Maybe he just wants to retire back home and all of that.
The fatigue of everything he's gone through to continue his career would be the only reason I could understand him stepping away from it entirely, because it's been such a grind to continue it. But yeah.
But mentally, he's wired like a guy that just wants the next step to be like even better.
All right. D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Really neat to see both your parents, Rob and Lisa, your fiance, Mary, here as well. There's some great reactions, and then as you can imagine, in the crowd. So I just wanted to see this. What do you think?
Oh, that's pretty special. So they're the reason why I'm able to do what I do right now. Their sacrifice means everything, and they're the best.
Just the fact that they're here watching this in person, I mean, what does that mean to you?
I mean, flying East Coast to Vegas in one day or this morning is a lot. It means a lot. I can't believe you guys just did that to me on TV. So
That is the beauty of television and why you have those moments potentially in interacting with a player after an emotional victory to tie the Stanley Cup final.
Listen, that's great.
Thanks to Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah, thanks to Kyle Bukauskas and the Hockey Night in Canada crew. That was awesome to catch him off guard after an emotional win. You know, you're tied in the Stanley Cup final. It's 2-2. You're going back home. There's so much. And then to show the image, I'm sure when he walked out after a shower and parents are there in the family room, and that's got to be emotional as well. So that was great. Good on him to be vulnerable in that moment and show how much that cares.
He cares. And then there's Paul Skeens, who I think has done, you know, an incredibly admirable job wherever he finds himself. Like, he just carries himself well. Not easy to do when you're a star player on a team that has never been able to ascend the way you would like. And I get it, he's early on in his career, but the Pittsburgh Pirate made fans for life again yesterday.
So it was Livy Dawn, right, that showed it on Instagram, and she's like, what do? You drive around Pittsburgh, and then you see Little League baseball, you know, practice going on, and Paul decided to pull over and jump in and play catch with the kids and all of it. Like, that's amazing. I remember when
apparently
I was a
spent
kid,
a couple hours,
oh,
by
yeah,
the way.
Oh, yeah, a long time. I remember
signing
when I was
gear
a kid.
And all that.
So when I was a kid, Robbie Fedoruk was playing with the Quebec Nordiques, and he always kept sticks in his trunk, and he would drive around, and he saw, like, kids on a pond or playing street hockey, and we'd get out and play. It could be weird if you don't know that this is Robbie Fedoruk, and you'd be like, who's this grown-up that's playing hockey? But I remember thinking, that's awesome. Like, I hope a Nordiques player stops by my little street hockey game and plays with us, right? And that's what Paul Skeen did for that you know, that community, those people.
Yeah, and he tossed six good innings last night, kept the Dodgers to two runs before they exploded for 10 against the Pirates' bullpen in the seventh and rolled to an easy victory. Did you attend a Sabres game during the 25-26 season? We want to hear from you. Complete our postseason survey at sabres.com/survey, and you'll be entered for a chance to win Sabres jerseys and autograph pucks. Dave Pagnotta from the fourth period coming up on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabre fans, lock in your seats for the 26-27 season with the Sabres 10-game plan. Enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. You can choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. Stanley Cup final will go at least six this year. It's travel day after Game 4. Game 5 comes up tomorrow in Raleigh. That is, well, it's where Dave Pagnotta is going to be very soon.
Yes.
He's en route today, and he's from the fourth period. Great to have him on the show. David, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good, guys. Little tired right at the moment. Early early bird call. There's no directs, so
no.
And I'm not on the charters, so we're going 7 a.m. We're in Phoenix at the moment, and then jump on a plane in a little bit back to Raleigh.
I know fans are like, why is there 2 days sometimes in between games? And in the second round Montreal-Buffalo series, I felt like I needed a couple of 2 days in between. Like, it was like every other day. Is this something that the league is going to do more now? Maybe look at, okay, let's spread it out with more two-day breaks because it's becoming very demanding physically?
Yeah, that's the preference. If this series started 2 days later on the fourth, then it would have been we would have had 2 days off in between all travel days. But because it didn't, because everything got moved up, and I think it was more so on ESPN/ABC's side, they wanted the things to move up a little bit. That's what kind of jammed up the schedule. So a lot of people were looking forward to the extra day off in between travels, but unfortunately we didn't get it this year. But that's the preference. But because, you know, the conference finals ended so early, or not so early, but earlier than anticipated. We get this 1 day in between for some of these games, but there will be 2 days off between 5 and 6. And then if it goes 7, 2 days off in between that too.
Well, we're enjoying the arrivals and departures behind you right now, so this is a stimulating video. But beyond the conversation that we're having, what is the big story for you now that this series is even at 2 and heading back to Raleigh?
Just how entertaining this series has been. I mean, the back and forth in the Stanley Cup final has been absolutely ridiculous. I mean, nobody anticipated this amount of goal scoring and gold production for this particular Stanley Cup final. I thought it'd be entertaining. Maybe not the sexiest type of a final because of how these two teams play, and probably 3-2 type of finals, not 5-3, 5-4s, and everything that we've been seeing so far, overtime, double OT, not overly surprising, but just the manner in which it's happened, and the goal production has been fantastic. It's also, you know, illustrated some deficiencies perhaps in some of the defense out there, because I'm not throwing this all on the goalies by any stretch, but the overall performance of these two teams and the relentlessness of their attack, the back and forth, the no quit attitude, it has been super entertaining, and the ratings are reflecting that.
Now, John Tortorella was pretty good after the game last night. He didn't, like, lose his patience other than when the microphone fell over and then he looked at the guy sideways. But I feel like
poor,
maybe
poor Bob.
Poor Bob, yes, poor Bob in that situation. But I feel like Carolina made their move. They went to Bussy, and Anderson was given a break. I don't know if he's healthy, not, but Brendan Moore said he just needed a break. Torts is kind of handcuffed to Carter Hart right now. Do you think that's a problem for Vegas moving forward? Or could you even see Adin Hill go in maybe and play game five?
I'd be surprised, Marty, if they go in that direction. Like, I think it's Carter's net, and that's it. And everything that he's done down the stretch, you know, towards kind of March, especially in April, and then throughout the playoffs. I mean, I think for them, it kind of solidifies their position with him in net. They didn't have the best game last night, and obviously they got the L. But he's been, you know, he's stood up when he's needed to. I think the first game, you get a little bit of nerves, first Stanley Cup final, and you're in the opposite barn, so you're dealing with all the noise and outside distractions, kind of like I am here at the airport. You know, he kind of settled in the last couple of games. And then for whatever reason, you know, right out of the gate, Carolina got to their game pretty early. And I think that kind of caught Vegas off guard a little bit. And I think Carter Hart as well. And then he started to settle down a little bit later on. So I would be surprised if Vegas decides to go for a change. And, you know, from Carolina's side, we'll see who is the starter tomorrow. It wouldn't shock me if they go back to Freddie, even though Bussy got the W.
Wow, okay. Like, it's all about health, I think. But Bussy wins, though. And even yesterday, he didn't do anything spectacular. But he just makes that one save when you need it, and then it comes a win. But it's much more than just Brendan Bussy, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and David, we're curious. Yeah. We were, you know, wondering along these lines in our first segment today, just like, you guys are really close to it now. You see hints of things on off days and skates and then in-game situations. Are there any players that you're looking at right now in-game that you think are just a little bit off, fighting through something that maybe isn't getting talked about enough, and how that may still shape the remaining games of this series?
Yeah, you know, I'm curious as to the health of Jack Eichel. And he hasn't really, he's had some opportunities, and he's to score, to shoot the puck, and he's dished that off quite often. He had an opportunity at the end of the game, or near the end of the game last night, and then he did get it off, but it went about 30 feet wide. You know, the way that things are going for Jack, I'm a little bit curious as to his overall health status. Dorofeev as well, we know, you know, he's had a few things in the past this season, but you know, even him, he hasn't been his natural offensive self. He's not being fed the puck as often as well. Carolina's doing a good job in kind of trying to contain that line, but you know, it looks like those are two guys, but Jack especially looks a little bit off to me. It looks like he's not comfortable shooting, and I mean, quite frankly, I'd like to see him shoot more just in general. But that's one of the guys that I'm a little bit curious as to his health status, because he doesn't look like he's even, you know, 80% to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Jack Eichel's shot changed the Colorado-Vegas series. They were down 3-0, comes down the wing, shoots to the glove blocker side of Wedgwood way off his angle, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, Vegas comes back, they sweep Colorado. I think Jack had a big impact in that series, and not so much in the first four games. But for Carolina, we talked about Jordan Staal in our first segment. What are you seeing out of Jordan Staal that has made him, like, this beast of a player now in the finals and compared to Mario Lemieux and Mike Bossy in the amount of goals that he scored in the first four.
Yeah, five goals already in the first four. And that game winner where he was falling on his back, it was just unbelievable. This is a guy that's playing with a high level of confidence. And, you know, he's a gamer. And the physicality that he brings, to everything, his ability to be at the net, he's a big, strong body. So, you know, it's going to take a lot of effort to kind of force him out of the crease. And he's not afraid to go there. He's not afraid to get dirty. And, you know, he's got that goal-scoring capability as well. You know, for Carolina to have this player playing, at this level as your leader, as your captain, that's huge for I think this team. And the guys talked about it after the game as well, just not only just complimenting him, but just indicating, you know, what it is to see this guy going off at this time of year is an added motivator for a lot of their guys. And they call him the ultimate playoff warrior. And there have been others that have said over the years, and guys that have coached him as well, that have said, you know, he is your prototypical Stanley Cup stud that you need on your team to win a hockey game in the Stanley Cup final. And he's proven it.
David Pagnotta is with us from the fourth period. I think the funny part about looking at Staal and the goal-scoring success here is almost to, like, to fault over the course of his career. He's been so consistent, but sometimes at a level just under what people, I think, originally thought Jordan Staal would be through the course of his career.
Right. Like 20 goals in a season in 10 years.
Yeah, so he's like just a 20-goal scorer, so to speak, right?
But
then when you, because this happens all the time, not every superstar on every team is going to be the highest producer in every series. So there's great concern on the Carolina side right now. Need more from Aho, need more from Svechnikov, right? But that often gets offset by consistent, steady, reliable players like Jordan Staal. It's a fascinating dynamic, which is what makes these series incredible to watch. So how do you view then the high-end Carolina guys who are quiet right now?
Well, and just something else to add, just with respect to Staal, his defensive abilities and what he's been able to do in shutting down.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a lot of that with respect to Eichel's line has been very impactful, so far in this one. It would be nice to, we were talking about this earlier when we got here and after the game as well. But, you know, Aho, Svechnikov, even Jarvis last night. And I know they moved out the lines a little bit. I didn't see much from 24 on Carolina last night. Aho, Svech, again, you know, throughout the series.
Yeah.
I know Svechnikov scored the other night and Jarvis got the winner in game two. But you want to see more levels of consistency there. That being said, they're obviously going to be contained because we know how dangerous they can be. So Vegas is going to try to contain them as much as they can and try to spread out their defensive responsibilities to minimize the offense from those guys. But then that's where a guy like Jordan Staal really comes in. And also, you know, Logan Stankoven and Jackson Blake, you know, they haven't really produced too much, especially Jackson Blake hasn't really done much in the first three games of this series. And then last night they stepped up as well. They both got on the score sheet. Jackson Blake had 2 points. Goal and an assist. Stankoven came out and opened things up, and then Staal was able to bang two in, and you know to get that right out of the gate. Like Jackson Blake has been a performer all season long. He's a dog type player. That's what Jordan Staal is too. Obviously different types of skill sets, but you know they needed those guys to really step up in the series, and they finally did in game four. And when you get those guys that are getting the job done, it takes away a little bit and casts a bit of a shadow on the lack of offense that you're getting from, you know, your bigger guns in this one, in Svechnikov, Jarvis, and Aho. And, you know, if that's the game plan and you're going to let Vegas try to focus on those guys and, you know, create less defensive opportunities against your other guys, if you're Carolina, you're going, okay, go for it because it's working for us.
I got a challenge for you. So whenever you guys have the next press conference with John Tortorella, I want you to ask him this.
Here we go.
Torts, do you think that your challenge in game two, your terrible, terrible challenge in game two, woke up Carolina's power play? Because they're 4-for-7 since that challenge. They scored two consecutive goals. They went 1-for-2, and then again, a power play goal in yesterday's game. So I want you to, and you could say Marty Biron wants to know, if your terrible challenge in game two woke up Carolina's power play, would you do that for me?
Well, the mic's not going to fall. It's going to get chucked at my head in that one. So, Marty, respectfully, I will wait until after. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. The power play started to wake up now for this team. And, you know, in games, in that game in game two and then in game three, they tied the game late in those games, both on power plays. Yeah, if you're Vegas right now, you can't kind of look at that and say, okay, well, our PK is just that good. We don't have to concern ourselves with Carolina's power play. The Canes have confidence on the man advantage now, and that's just something that you should probably try to nip in the bud as much as you can. So you need to be a little bit more responsible there and prevent getting down a man. That would help. I mean, 5-on-5, things have been pretty decent. And the second period for Vegas throughout this series has been absolutely ridiculous. They've taken advantage of that. It's not even close. It's like 90% to 10% in terms of production going Carolina's way. Vegas's way over Carolina. Mm-hmm. So Vegas just needs to be more consistent. I think Carolina has won the battle of the first period in every game so far. Vegas has just absolutely owned the second period. And then the third, it's a bit of a free-for-all that we've seen so far. Which all of this has made this final just ridiculously fun.
David, your reputation and through the fourth period over the last couple of decades has been, you know, grinding out stories and breaking news and things like that. So I'm really curious, like, away from the actual games right now, what are you following? And this could be like you guys sitting at the airport right now waiting for that next flight. Like, is the buzz Larkin or is the buzz Babcock right now or both or... other matters beyond those two?
All of the above. We were actually, just before I jumped on, we were talking about Babcock and what the hell's going on there. It's obvious that the Oilers want to hire him because the league is now moving forward with their investigation. If the Oilers didn't want to do this and didn't want to bring him on, then it would be a moot point at this stage. But the league, after the NHLPA, you know, passed this off to the league is for their responsibility in providing them with some more information as well. That's the kind of the storyline right now that we're trying to focus in on, because there is a lot of information that was collected at the time in 2023 with Columbus, right when he jumped on, that hasn't been public, and that they hadn't had to move forward on a lot of that information because he ended up resigning. So I'm curious to see. Now, it's also the understanding that a lot of that dirty laundry has been aired out to Edmonton, so they appear to be aware of what's gone on and still want to move forward here. But we'll see if additional information obviously comes out with respect to this for Babs and the Oilers situation. And there's no timeline on this. Like, this could take, if this is done properly, a proper investigation of this magnitude could take upwards of a year. Now, I don't think it's going to go anywhere near that close or that far, excuse me. But then we're talking from like a legal perspective. You know, some of these cases can take upwards of 12 months. This is going to be significantly shorter order in comparison. But there seems to be also a lot of that information that's already been collected to kind of speed up this process. But, you know, the NHLPA didn't necessarily have the resources to move forward with something like this. So they've kind of asked the league to step in, and the league is now doing that. So we'll see what happens there. The other thing, too, with the Oilers, it doesn't matter who their head coach is. They need a goalie.
Yep.
They need to figure out this Darnell Nurse situation, where he's going and who's playing, who else is playing D on that club. They're looking and on their checklist want to add somebody on the wing for Connor McDavid and presumably Zach Hyman as well. They need a 3C. They need some guys in the fourth line. Like, there's a lot of work that has to be done in Edmonton, even beyond their head coaching search and whoever the guy is there. So that's another thing that we're trying to keep tabs on. What's happening roster-wise with this team? What's happening roster-wise with a lot of clubs? There are a lot of teams that want to make noise here this summer because the free agency pool is just so shallow. They have no choice but to start fishing in a bigger pond, and right now that's the trade market.
You mentioned the free agency pool. Any Alex Tuck news or rumblings or And it's been very quiet, and that, and we're kind of just waiting here until July 1 to see if he's a UFA.
As of now, it's looking like it's going in that direction. You know, guys, and I'm going to state the obvious here, but if this were close, it would probably be done by now. Every indication that I've been given is that there is still a pretty wide gap in conversations and in the negotiation process right now between Tuck and the Sabres and Yarmo. It doesn't look, as of now, again, like, and things change on a dime, so that's why I'm trying to preface it by saying that. But at this, as far as I know, as of last actual update that I have was last night, they're not close, and every indication is that this is going to free agency. Now, I tried reaching out to their camp. They're not offering any comments on this at the moment, for obvious reasons, because they're still going through this back and forth with the Sabres. And this is in a scenario where they've, you know, either side is Nick's ties. It's the lines of communication are still there, but it just sounds like it's too far apart as of today. If I'm putting anything down on it, maybe on Friday when I go back to Vegas, it would be that he's going to July 1. But again, things change in one phone call.
All right, 10 seconds or less. Where's Larkin end up?
Oof, Minnesota. It just seems like it's just too much of a fit.
They gave Michael McCarron 6 years at 3.3. That's they right. can't get Larkin.
Yeah, they still got the cap space. They got the assets. It just seems like too much of a perfect fit.
David, safe travels. Best to your entire crew at the fourth period. Thanks so much.
Yes.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Take care.
There's David Pagnotta from the fourth period. Great insight as always. And we will wrap up Sabres Live right after this. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Nice to see old friend, former Sabre captain Steve Ott, getting himself a 2-year extension as coach in Springfield of the AHL.
That's great. Look, always an assistant coach, but now went back to the AHL to be a head coach, to get through these minutes and how to run an organization, a team. And who knows, maybe we see him in the NHL in the next few years.
Yeah, I think it's highly possible that he will be back in some form after this great experience he is gaining.
And as a head coach, it would be good to see that, because I think he's got that wired. Like, that's how he's prepped. He was a great leader, captain, not the most talented player, but works hard and is a good coach.
He and Benson would get along well.
Oh, I wouldn't want to have a puck in the corner against those two. That's what I saw a Benny the Rat t-shirt yesterday in Rochester,
bleeding.
By the way.
Oh, did you?
Benny the Rat t-shirt was really good.
NBA Finals continues tonight. World Cup begins tomorrow.
Yeah, so the NBA Finals has been fantastic, and tonight is game five. So they're Game four. Game four, sorry, I'm one game ahead. Game four, the Knicks are up 2-1, but they won both games in San Antonio. The Spurs won in New York. And the FIFA World Cup starting tomorrow. From now until June 27th, there's games every day. You're going to get games, and late at night, too. There's some 10 o'clock games for you, Duffer, your late bird that you are, because of where the games are, Canada, U.S., Mexico. So they're going to be everywhere. There's games at every time of the day.
Hopefully you saw my reaction there. On this date in Sabres history, June 10th, 1970, the Sabres pick up Roger Crozier, which was a great foundational piece to start the organization. Obviously, he had previously won a Conn Smythe in a losing effort, and that was this ultimately was a trade. They, you know, dealt Tom Webster to Detroit. I mean, Tom ended up having an incredible career in the game, ultimately as a head coach. And again, it's always fun to think back of the origins of the Sabre franchise and some of the, you know, and we just lost Jerry Meehan, but some of the people who became early pillars for the growth of this team.
Yeah, and obviously Crozier was a fantastic leader, a goalie, somebody that established himself. He had won the Conn Smythe in the losing cause with the Detroit Red Wings before in his career, so he was already established. And you know what's great about the playoffs this year, and especially playing Boston, Montreal, is going back and revisiting some of the past years and the series. A lot of people talking to me last night about, you know, like these series and the events that has happened between Boston and Buffalo in the past. So it got to revisit a lot of the alumni and their impact in the playoffs.
Happy birthday, 40th birthday, Chad Johnson.
Yeah, Dos Nueve, not Ocho Cinco, Chad Johnson. I got to know him with the Rangers. When I broke my collarbone, he was in Hartford. He got called up, so I was hanging out with him for the better part of a couple of months, and then he was here in Buffalo. Buffalo. Did well in Buffalo and tried to kind of get another job elsewhere. Didn't take on as much as he wanted to.
Two seasons with the Sabres. The first one was incredible. It was Eichel's first year. Yeah. He ended up, 22 wins, .920 save percentage, .236 goals against. We're out of numbers. We'll see you tomorrow.